Awesome. You know, what's interesting about U2 is they started as this small seed band somewhere in Ireland, and look at the success they've had, which is a huge, talk about a huge return on investment. Awesome way to start us off today. Great to have you here this morning. We're taking a look at how there is a different way of living and how, you know, we can approach our stuff differently, the things that God has given to us, if we so choose to. And, you know, when we begin to think critically through what we have and critically through where that actually came from, as Eric said, it's not by my doing. Sometimes we're like, well, man, I earned everything I have. Well, you know, technically you did work for it, but God gave you the ability to earn something. God actually gave you the ability to have success. He gave you the intellect. I mean, much of what you have actually ultimately started with God. And so, you know, when we begin to see these things, we begin to actually view the things that we own, the things that we have, the things that we enjoy differently. And actually we begin to do things differently. So today we're going to continue to kind of dig into this idea of what would it look like to have my life, to have our lives have a return, to have a return on the investment of what God has blessed us with. And so really excited you're here today. My name is Kurt, by the way. I'm what they call a pastor around here at Cross Point. And if it's your first time with us, man, I just want to say welcome. Really excited you've chosen to join us today. As PJ said and Eric said, this is a big, big day around here at Cross Point, and I hope you'll get a glimpse of the heartbeat of this place. So before we do anything else, let's just take a moment and pray. God, thank you that we can come into a place like this, into a dark room on a beautiful Sunday, and dive into a topic that we cannot talk about in many other sectors in our world. We're going to dive into some things today that we're not going to hear in other places. And God, I'm thankful that I get to talk about it. I'm thankful for the way that my life has been growing over these last few weeks as we've been looking at the things that we have. And I just pray that that what we talk about today, that it would be helpful. God, I pray that it would be inspiring, and most of all, it would be challenging. Amen. Well, you know, when I communicate, whether it's here at Cross Point or if it's somewhere else, I always try to think through what is it that is the main thing? What's the main thing I want people to know, and what's the main thing I want people to do? And, you know, I never tell you that up front, because otherwise you wouldn't really go where I want to take you. You know, you're like, oh, man, I'm not going to go there. I'm shutting off right now. But today I'm going to tell you. My main goal today and everything we do following is to get every single one of us to go on a one-week beans and rice fast this upcoming week. Everything we're going to do is to help you see the value this can bring to your life and to the life of others. And we're actually going to give you a starter kit. If you when you leave today, if you did not receive one of these last weekend, you will receive a starter kit. We're going to feed you in this. All right, we're actually giving you the seed investment for you to go on a fast this week. This is at least one, if not two meals right here. And what's cool is, you know, you're actually going to identify, we're going to start you off by helping you identify with over 2 billion people in the world today. Over 2 billion people, this is all they will eat today, tomorrow, the next day, ongoing, forever. They only eat a cup of beans and rice a day. And you're going to be able to identify with them for a week. And the reason we're doing this, and listen, you can do this all week. You can go every meal all week long. You know, our family's going to try to do as many meals as possible. You can choose to say, hey, I'm going to hit 2 days of beans and rice, or 4 days, or 6 days. Maybe you travel in the middle of the week, and you can't commit to it during that time, but when you're home, you can. Maybe you can say, you know, I'm going to do 2 meals a day. I'm going to do breakfast and dinner. I have a lot of lunch appointments I have to meet because of business or whatever. You know, whatever it is, we hope you engage at some level. And be creative, you know, if you're not huge on beans, innovate. You know, use stuff you already have in your house. You probably have some chicken in your freezer. Add that into the rice. You know, the goal is that we're reducing our grocery bill, and the only things we're really buying from the grocery are essentials. If your kids need milk, obviously do that. Make good decisions, you know, keep your family well. But we're going to sustain ourselves on one of the cheapest forms of food for 1 week in order that we can return that next weekend. And the idea is that if this costs, say, 50 cents, which is about what it costs for this packet right here, when you go to McDonald's, you're going to, you know, maybe spend $7, and you say, you know, I'm today not going to go to McDonald's. I'm going to eat this, and the difference, $6.50, I'm going to return. Or, you know, maybe you have a date night, you know, every week, and you are going to go to someplace like Seasons 52 and spend $92. Well, you know, if each of you eat a cup of beans and rice each, and, you know, then all of a sudden you just save $91 that you can return. And so, you know, and you can do this daily. You can electronically through our new Give app. You can give this every day to kind of keep up with it. Get it out of your hair. Say, hey, I saved this much today. I'm going to give it today. You can actually go on there. There's a beans and rice designation you can choose. Or you can stash your cash through the week, and you can bring it back next weekend. And so, you know, whatever works for you. And I'm going to tell you in a few minutes why we're doing this, some of the key investments we're going to be building into. But before we do that, a little bit of content on the development side. I've been watching the Bible, the History Channel's version of the Bible. Some of you watched it about a year ago. It was on the History Channel. I don't have the History Channel, so I'm right now watching it on iTunes. And it's been very fascinating. The cheese factor's pretty low, so I've kind of dug it. I mean, I get into it. Sometimes the Bible made-for-TV movies are just cheesy, and they're like Hallmark all over the place, and I can't stand those because that's not the Bible. This one's pretty low on the cheese factor, but I've been watching to see if my favorite stories are in there. Because, some of my favorite stories, Hollywood always goes for the big stories, the wow stories, which is fine. It's cool to communicate those. But I really like the stories that are more about character development. One of my favorite stories didn't make the cut. The two before it actually made it, one of those being the Passover. Passover made the Bible miniseries. And the Passover, Jews are celebrating this today. In fact, it's a Holy Week situation for this, where the final miracle happened as God was delivering his people out of slavery in Egypt. And basically, Charlton Heston or Moses, whoever you think of him as, they're kind of interchangeable for me, kind of went to Pharaoh and said, hey, you need to let my people go or bad things are going to happen. And so, all of these miracles began to happen. And actually, the last miracle that happened, which was where the angel of death came, or the angel of the Lord is really what it was. We like to think of it as the angel of death, but it was really God. God said to the Israelite nation, who he was trying to free, he said, put blood of a lamb on your doorpost. And then God basically cruised into Egypt, the angel of death, or God, and cruised through all of the homes in Egypt, and any home that had the blood of a lamb on its doorpost, he cruised over and bypassed. He passed over. Any family who did not have blood on their doorpost, he went in and killed their firstborn son. That's why it's called the Passover. Because the Israelites, they followed God's instructions and put blood on the doorpost, and they got passed over. Really cool stuff. I mean, cool miracles, the way God worked. This actually prepared the way for this nation of Israel to go into freedom. Of course, that makes the hit, the movies every time. The next one makes it as well, as the Israelite people begin to get out of Egypt. They come up to the Red Sea, and Moses goes up to the Red Sea, and he puts his staff in the ground. And it's like whoosh, and the sea parts, and like hundreds of thousands of people go through the Red Sea and walk on dry ground as these walls of water separate so they can cross the sea. Cool miracle. That always makes the cut, but the next one never makes it. All right, it's one of my favorite stories. And this is the story where the nation of Israel goes on a 40-year-long journey, and during this journey, they have to learn how to survive. They have to learn how to sustain themselves. Here's what it says in Exodus 16. It says, when the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was, and Moses said to them, it is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. Now, maybe you've heard the phrase bread of heaven. That comes from this story. The nation of Israel, they've left all their possessions in Egypt. They're beginning to wander through the wilderness. They don't have any economy. They don't have any way to provide for themselves. And the big question is, how are they going to sustain themselves? How are they going to eat? So every day, they go out of their tents as they're on this journey, and they walk out, and they go out, and there's this stuff, this white flaky stuff on the ground, and they go, what is it? And in the Hebrew, the word for what is it is actually manna. That's actually what the word is. Some of you think it's bread. It's not. It's actually translated in Hebrew into what is it? And so, they would have just enough of this crusty bread, this white, sweet, crusty bread on the ground every morning. It was like dew on the ground. They would go out and they'd begin to break it up and they'd eat it up because they hadn't eaten in a whole day. And then they'd put it in jars and store it to the next day. And get this, it would rot overnight because God said, I don't want there to be a savings. And so they couldn't store any for the next day. And so, they'd go to bed and the next day they'd get up and come out of their tent, and they walk out, and they'd be like, oh, man, it's back. Well, it's awesome. It's back. What is it? It's back. Manna is back. And they did this for 40 years, right? For 40 years, they couldn't store any up, but every morning, God continued to provide their sustenance for the next day. See, there are two times in our life, two key times that we will all go through, maybe going through one of them right now, likely. You will all go through times of sustenance and times of abundance. Let's talk about sustenance. Times of sustenance are when you have just enough to make it to the next day. Times of sustenance is where you have just enough paycheck left at the end of the month. I mean, times of sustenance are where you, you know, you have basically your pure basic survival needs are met. And, you know, when you're in sustenance mode, it doesn't necessarily mean that God's punishing you. All right, sometimes we think, man, God must be angry. That's why I'm only basically barely getting by. No, sometimes God is forming us through that season. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're a dumb person, that you don't understand how to get a return on investment. It's just that God's teaching us something or growing us. He's showing that he provides for our needs. All of us, likely at one point in our lives or another, have gone through a time of sustenance. Here's what it says again in Exodus 16. It says, now the house of Israel called its name manna. When they said, what is it? It was manna. It was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer, a very small amount of it, be kept throughout your generations so that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness, which I brought you out of the land of Egypt. And so they couldn't keep enough to sustain themselves. They could just get a little bit amount, enough so that they could tell their kids and their kids' kids and the next generations, hey, this is the bread that God provided for 40 years every single morning so that our needs were met. You say, God, we remember it. See, we've probably all gone through moments like this where God has just provided the core basic needs. I mean, the Walters family, we've been through some of those. Right now, the Walters family is in what I would consider an abundance mode. You know, there are things that we don't have right now because of our giving, because we've chose to redirect some of our finances into things here at Crosspoint and tithing and building the Launchpad and other initiatives that we've given up certain things that we don't have because of that, but that's a choice we've made. But by and large, I mean, if there's anything we really need, we can figure out a way to make it happen. I'm not worrying about how I'm going to feed my family tomorrow, all right? You know, it's one of those things. I remember being in seasons like that. I remember, you know, when we, early on, you know, I remember, like, we couldn't buy more than, like, the 4-pack of toilet paper, right? I mean, yesterday I bought, like, the 36-pack. God bless America. 36 packs, 36 rolls at one time. And I got a huge investment because the savings was huge on that. You know, there was a season where we really needed to replace a car. And we just didn't have the finances to do it, but partly because we had made the decision to pay down our debt. And so all of the extra was going to paying down our revolving debt, and we decided not to take any more debt on. And I'll never remember going into my mechanic, and he came out, and he's like, Kurt, I just don't understand it. Your serpentine belt, man, it is like 3 years past its duty cycle. I don't know how it's lasting. And in my mind, I'm like, it's a miracle. This is God sustaining us. I don't have the $84 for the serpentine belt right now. I mean, that was God sustaining us. I'll never forget getting a phone call from my wife's brother. And that was a season, again, when that particular car was, you know, it was in the shop more and more. We were repairing it. Repairing it was cheaper than a car payment. And it was a small car, and our family was growing. We were needing something larger. Didn't know how we were going to make that happen. So we just kind of said, we'll figure it out as we go. You know, we're not at the point of need yet. And my brother-in-law called, and he said, you know, Kurt and Julie, hey, I've got my Ford Expedition. I've taken really good care of it. It's got low miles. I'm getting a company car this week. I need to sell my Expedition. They're only going to give me $3,000 on the trade-in. It's worth about three times that much, but I don't have the time to sell it. If you guys want it, I thought I'd offer it to you for $3,000. If not, no big deal. We're like, wow, that would be huge. That'd be awesome. Except we don't have $3,000. I mean, we need cash for this. Well, it was about this time of year, and we got a return on our taxes that made up 2/3, maybe a little more of that. And then with the little bit of savings we had stashed away, we actually were able to pay cash for this car. And it blew us away. That was God sustaining us. You know, it would have been easy to be like, oh, man, I just had to spend. Why wasn't it just given flat out to me? Well, you know, sometimes God doesn't work that way. God says, I will provide for your need. Usually we're a part of the process of the solution. You know, it's amazing because we live in a culture of America that is an abundant culture. I mean, for the most part, there's probably few of us right now that are in sustenance mode. There might be some of us that we're in a growth season in sustenance mode. For the most part, we live in abundance mode. Another way I could kind of give you a picture of this, when we were in Mexico about 15 years ago with a group of students, we were doing some work projects in Monterey, and our students were doing like a little Bible school for the kids, and one day after the Bible school event, there were some little boys hanging around, Mexican boys hanging around our work project, and one of our teenage boys said, hey, would you guys want a Coke or a Diet Coke or a Sprite? And they just looked at him, and they were like, see. And the kid was like, well, which one do you want? And they're like, see. And he didn't know what to do. He's like, what do I do? And I thought about that. And I thought, why was his answer yes? Why was all the boy could say was yes? And I realized, well, one of the reasons was maybe he had never even had a soda before. And so when he was offered a soda, he's like, yes, give me them all. I want all of them. I want to try them all. And then the other thing I realized is that I bet that little kid had never had a choice of a soda. See, when you and I have the ability to make a choice on what we want, it gives us indication we're living in abundance. If you can make the choice on whether you want a Sprite or a Diet Coke, you live in abundance. If you got up this morning and you could decide, am I going to wear this shirt or that shirt, you live in abundance. I mean, if you can decide where you want to live and what school you want your kids to go to and on Friday night what entertainment options you want to enjoy, listen, friends, we live in abundance. The rest of the world, they don't have the privilege of that choice. That's a blessing that you and I experience. And so the question that I want us to really wrestle through this morning, really wrestle through, and every one of us are going to have to think through, where am I at on this? Why don't you ask yourself, when was the last time I voluntarily went into a mode of sustenance in order that someone else could have a shot at abundance? Let me say that again. When's the last time you went into a mode of sustenance so that someone else could have a shot at abundance? Meaning, when's the last time you went without a few things in order that someone else could have a shot at something that's a little more than what they have? And what I've been discovering is that the closer you are to God, the more that this is a part of your life. The closer you are to God, the more you're growing your relationship with God, the more this is a normal pattern for you to go without certain things in order that someone else can have a shot. The book of Psalms says it this way. It says, with a free will offering, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. See, next weekend, we're going to have the opportunity at a free will offering. And you're going to have, in and of your own will, the ability to say, you know, I'm going to go without McDonald's this week, and I'm going to eat some beans and rice and try to spend as little as possible in order that someone else might have an education. Or I'm going to go without that, you know, pre-cooked rotisserie chicken from Kroger on the way home from work, you know, and I'm going to choose to eat beans and rice in order that somebody else might have a meal ongoing because I have so much around me. I'm just going to identify with them for a short time, but I'm going to give the difference. I'm going to have a free will offer. I'm going to be generous with it. And that generosity is going to be out of this sense of saying, oh my word, God, I have so much around me. I want to just tell you how good you are and how good you have been to me, and I want to donate and be generous to others in the world so they might have a shot. They might have a shot. So I'm going to give that offering as a result. And here's the thing. To voluntarily do that, see, we're not making anybody do anything. To voluntarily enter into sustenance mode is a really cool thing. When you're forced into it, it's not so cool. But at the same time, when you're forced into it, there can still be growth. In fact, in the recent financial downturn of the last two, three, 4 years, you know, there was one of the big players on the financial stage is no more. Lehman Brothers went under. And there's an article with their CFO a few months ago in New York Times where she talked about the change that took place in her life when she had her abundance taken away. In fact, here's what she said. She said, without the crisis, I may never have been strong enough to step away. Perhaps I needed what felt at the time like some of the worst experiences in my life to come to a place where I could be grateful for the life that I had. I had to learn to begin to appreciate what I had or what was left. And so you see, she wasn't able to appreciate the abundance she had until she entered into sustenance mode. And it's interesting how sustenance and abundance actually go hand in hand. They actually work really well together. In fact, here's the reality. You don't appreciate abundance until you go through sustenance. And at the same time, you can't endure sustenance until you believe in abundance. Let me say that again. You don't appreciate abundance until you step into sustenance, which is what we're going to have the opportunity to do this week with beans and rice. We're going to sustain ourselves on as little, on the food that costs the least amount of money in the world, the 2 billion people in the world live off of, and you can't endure sustenance unless you believe that at the end there's actually an abundance. You know what's at the end of this week is Easter lunch, all right? That's the end, all right? You got Easter lunch next week. That's the abundance coming your way, all right? But here's the thing. See, here's the thing. The nation of Israel, they knew they were going to the promised land. They knew they weren't eating quail and flaky, you know, manna for the rest of their life. They knew eventually there was going to be abundance. In fact, one of the great leaders of the Old Testament, Nehemiah, Nehemiah, he looked back at what his comrades had done as they exited Egypt and went to the promised land. And he actually commented on how God used that experience to spiritually form the Israelites, which, by the way, every single one of us who go on this beans and rice fast this week, you're going to be spiritually formed. I guarantee you, God is going to form you spiritually. And he recounted, and we're going to take a look. Let's look at Nehemiah. He recounted how this was good for everybody to go into sustenance mode. Here's what he said. He's referring to God here. He said, "You gave your good spirit to instruct them and did not withhold your manna from their mouth and gave them water for their thirst. 40 years you did what? Sustained them in the wilderness, and they lacked nothing, for their clothes did not wear out and their feet did not swell." Now listen, these are miracles right here. I mean, these are miracles like my serpentine belt going for like 3 years. My transmission, you know, my mechanic saying, "Man, I think the next time we have to deal with your transmission." 2 years go by, and he's like, "I can't believe it. This is God sustaining me." Here it says, they never went threadbare. Their clothes never wore out. Wore the same thing every day. 40 years, they never wore out. Not only did they have enough nutrition, it says their shoes never wore out, which is amazing, right? Even the kids, their feet never grew, even though they grew up. Their feet never, they never grew into a different shoe size. Their shoes lasted the entire 40 years. I mean, that is amazing. Because see what happens is when we go into sustenance mode, God actually grows us. God shows up and escalates us, and our faith grows. And that's my prayer for every single one of us this week, is that God will grow us through this one-week experiment. So why are we doing that? Here's a couple good reasons. We've got two blue-chip investments that we're going to have the ability to invest into that are located right here in Indianapolis that are addressing, meeting the needs and pulling and erasing poverty in our world. And so the first group is a group by the name of Serve Life. And I want you to take a look at this video, which will tell you a little bit about what they're about here.
Recently, we had a newspaper that 2,600,000 of children are still under the doing the labor as a working as a child labor here in Nepal. Recently, we had a newspaper on that. So this is a crucial things in country, because our country is very poor and many people, they don't have opportunity to go to the school and to get the good educations.
This part of Bihar, Raxaul, it's a very lower strata of society, the people living here. So basically, the children here, they're not provided well, like just basic stuff, like food and things. But also the important thing is education. I think why we want to have children here so that we can give them good education and also to give them Christian values, which is important.
Because of that reason, we had a compassion on that. And because of that, we started giving some scholarship program, providing money for the children, making children success to go to the school nearby to get the good educations, and where government cannot reach, and we are reaching the people, and we are facilitating the children to go to the school and providing educations and stationary things. All these things we are doing here. And along with that, we have a children's homes also, where we can give the substitute care, the children who cannot stay in their societies, in their families.
Loving the children, because Jesus loved the children. And I love children. Through the children, I can get into the community and I can speak to the parents, their families, about Jesus and why we are here, why we are showing this love.
See, the thing is, like, it's not, at the end of it, I just don't want them to have a good education. I want them to be a good person, which is important. Being educated and also knowing the Lord, knowing Jesus Christ as their Savior. And also, I think it's the thing that we really teach them is, since you're being, you know, helped and you're being saved, so when you grow big, you have to do that. You know, you have to also help others because you were helped at once.
And how cool is that? That they are teaching these kids that, hey, when we lift you out of poverty, you know what your role is? To help other kids get out of poverty. How cool is that? Now, we went out and began to look in the Indianapolis area and started shaking the trees and saying, who are the groups serving the poor and impoverished here, locally, internationally, that are creating a huge return on investment? And through some networks, came across Serve Life and met with Adam Nevins. He's not able to be here today because he's actually crossing the border into India even this morning. He was in like a little horse and buggy cart, you know, I think texting. I know you could text while you cross the border in India, but he was updating his status. That's what he's doing. And when I met with them, you know, they're a group that's serving the impoverished internationally. and they're meeting the needs of the poor in India and Nepal, and they do this through a network of children's homes. And he told me that recently they had to start a new home because the homes that they had were full, and some of the children were getting too old that they needed to be separated into boys and girls homes. These are kids with no parents. I mean, these are orphans. And so he basically said, you know, we're funded through June for the newest home. We just felt like God prompted us to start this home, and we didn't know how we were going to pay for it, but God just said, you've got to do this. And I said, well, what's it cost? What's it cost to fund this thing for a month? Maybe we can do that. And he said, $1,000. You can meet the medical, nutritional, the educational, and put shelter over their heads, pay the staff for $1,000 a month in one of these homes. And I said, how much would that cost back here? He said, about $10,000, $12,000. So I said, hey, we're in hopefully for the next 6 months. We're going to try to provide the next 6 months of funding for one of these orphanage homes in India and provide for the needs. Very short term. Hopefully we can continue even beyond that. But our initial goal is $6,000. Multiply that by 10 or 12 times and see what the exponential return is. Right? Incredible. Incredible. Second group we're going to be partnering with, there's a long-term need here in our greater Indianapolis area, and we can debate, you know, the state of our the Indianapolis budget and the state budget and whether it's really addressing poverty or not. But when experts look at the contributing factors that causes someone to be in poverty, they're very quickly identifying one major lever that either keeps kids in poverty or helps them get out of poverty. And that lever is this one thing called preschool. In fact, for kids that are in poverty, preschool education is the single biggest factor that will determine if that kid stays in poverty for the rest of their life. And so, you know, what preschool does, right? I mean, this is where kids get to go, and they begin to get an awareness. I actually stood out here with Rex, who you're going to hear from in a moment, and one of our preschool directors that goes here said, man, the kids that come to us that have been through First Steps or have had special needs and have services coming before they enter preschool or school, they're heads and shoulders above the rest of the kids in poverty situations. And so, you know, we realize that preschool education, if kids go to school and they're already behind, then they just get further behind. Kids in poverty, they don't have roofs over their head half the time. They don't have more than a meal on the table or two meals a day that come through the school system because there's no food at home. They have special needs that aren't getting addressed and met, and so they're being thrust into a school situation already behind, and they stay behind for the rest of their life. And so one of the things we're going to be doing through this Beans and Rice Week is we're going to be investing in a group called Shepherd Community Center in Indianapolis, which is addressing the needs of the poverty, of the impoverished on the Near East Side of Indianapolis. And we're going to fund as many kids as possible with this early education. And to help us understand how that works, help me welcome Rex Fisher to the platform this morning. Welcome, Rex. Turn that on. Yeah, Rex. Rex is the director. We got you.
Good to see you.
Rex is the director of development at Shepherd, and some of you yes. know him from our founding church, Church of the Crossing. We launched out yep. of Rex and his wife Gabby were at the mm-hmm. Church of the Crossing at that time.
Yep.
And we've recently reconnected. Mm-hmm. Tell us, give us a picture of what happens through the academy.
The academy, Shepherd Community as a whole operates a set of services from birth through college graduation and career placement. The academy has about 140 students in that private Christian academy, and 50 kids involved in that that academy or in the preschool services. And what demographic we have been working with are the impoverished on the Near East Side of Indianapolis. About 80% of those kids are first and second generation immigrants to the U.S. About 60% of those kids do not speak English in the home. And 25% of the kids in our academy would qualify or have been classified learning disabled. Mm-hmm. In IPS, about 9% of a school would be learning disabled. So what we have is this core demographic on the Near East Side that often doesn't have another option. You've got a family that's living in poverty that doesn't speak the language. Most of the parents would speak broken English or very limited. And if you have if they have a child who's learning disabled, there's not a large community naturally to walk alongside them.
And in some cases, they don't even understand that there's options out there. But you guys have to go find them, come alongside them, mm-hmm. say, hey, we can help you change your life, put it on a whole different trajectory.
Yeah, what we're really operating in, you know, our teachers and our teachers' aides are operating much less as a like an institutional figurehead, and much more as you would see an aunt and an uncle. We have to have a very high level of trust, a very high level of buy-in with the parents in order to serve their children and them as these kids pursue something that really hasn't been modeled in their family for at least three generations, which is a life outside of poverty. And the reason that that's important is by the time you're three generations in, there's no internal family model, family individual who is showing that model of life in abundance. That they can grasp onto and hold. So it's our job then to come in as volunteers and staff and partners and model a reality of abundance, what that could look like, and do that in a capacity or a critical mass that allows them to grab onto that and live into it.
Awesome. And so it starts with preschool, even before, sometimes even come alongside prenatal situations.
Absolutely.
Birth to, and then at fifth grade, they exit the academy and go into mm-hmm. IPS. How do you guys continue to come alongside them?
So in fifth grade, they'll go into IPS, and we'll pick them up. We'll bus them back in after school. They'll start their own graduation planning. They will build their own graduation plan. We will help them execute that. We won't do it for them, but we will walk alongside them, which is a little mind-blowing for me. In the fifth grade, I was not thinking about high school graduation.
And yet for these kids, they've never seen somebody graduate from high school, likely,
that's
right? I mean, that's what you're talking about, three generations at least of even getting a high school degree.
That's right. And then starting in high school, we'll start our college coaching program where a staff member will be matched up with them one-on-one to go visit college campuses and look at military options and professional job training. And really allow them to tease out what is my calling, what am I passionate about, what am I gifted for, and start to live into that. And a big part of that is actually the hope and belief that that is actually for them.
Wow. So how many kids have graduated from college now?
51.
51. Yeah. Can you believe that? 51 kids. How excited is that?
That is exciting.
Man, that's exciting.
You.
Yeah.
Along with that.
Yeah.
Thank you. We sent our first kid to Harvard 2 years ago.
Wow. How cool is that?
A young lady, first one to go off to Notre Dame on a full ride. We see a number of these kids come from situations where we had one young boy whose dad tried to sell him into the sex trade to pay off a debt, drug debt. We had a three-year-old at the end of last year who had as a disciplinary action. Dad slammed his hand in a door, 3 years old, had to have his finger reattached.
Wow.
And we work with those children to get them into safe situations, mm-hmm. To get often the mom mm-hmm. into a situation. When they leave, they have to go. So they leave, I mean, they leave everything, mm-hmm. and they often are coming into a housing situation where they have nothing. Partners and Shepherd work alongside them to make sure that we're building back a healthy, safe place for them to be and thrive. We'll never be able to hire our way into solving that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to blow you guys away. Just get ready. All right. Tell us about the return on investment.
For the preschool that we're talking about, that costs about $75,000 a year for those 50 kids to be engaged, over 50. For that, DePauw's Women in Business and Economics Club did a study, an economic impact study in 2010 on our entire academy. They determined that the ROI on that was $1 million, $75,000 invested in that academy, fueling that economy, that preschool translated into $1 million saved the state and local economy. And largely that's going to be in remediation and making sure the 90% of the kids that come out of our kindergarten are reading. ESL, mm-hmm. And actually keeping kids out of juvenile detention.
$75,000 produces $1 million return. That is incredible. Who would not sign up for that today, right? I mean, yeah. So, and then there's another figure you guys recently came across.
Yes. So, the same study we saw that for all of our academy costs about $250,000. And that saves the state and local economy about $6 million, over $6 million annually.
$6 million annually saved off a $250,000 investment.
Yes.
Wow. Isn't that incredible? Now, let me just give you a picture of how we can be a part of that. So we have no idea how much we're going to save by eating beans and rice this week. And I know not everybody's going to do this. All right, I know some are going to do it and some aren't, and some are going to do it at different levels. There's a lot of grace in this. But here's the deal. We've kind of narrowed in on one number for example's sake, all right? Love to do $6,000 for Serve Life. Love to do $14,000 or more for Shepherd Community. And so if this community can, at the end of next week, save $20,000, and that is doable, all right? That means of everyone that's in the seats in the auditorium, both services today, if every single person saves $67 this week, we would reach $20,000. Some of us are going to save way more. My bill is going to be way bigger than that. Some of us aren't going to do it, but if we had $67 per adult or student in here, we would hit $20,000. Look at the return. The return would be $250,000 funneled into these two organizations, serving and meeting the needs of the impoverished. How cool is that? How cool is that? Now, we've got a story, and we'll talk about her in just a second, but let's take a look at this. Here's a story from one of the students from Shepherd right here.
My name is Denise Harrison-Hudson. This is my story. I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, with my mom and a brother and a sister. She was a single mom. We experienced poverty at a young age. Since she was a single mom, she couldn't really afford us. In fact, when I was young, she gave me up for adoption because she didn't know how to afford my brother and sister along with myself. Eventually, she came to decide that she wanted me. So growing up in the inner city of Indianapolis, there was a huge struggle. When my brother and sister started school, my mom couldn't afford a babysitter, and I wasn't yet old enough to go to school, so I had to move with my mom's friend. So I didn't see my family for a whole year. This is where my life started to take a turn, for the worse, I guess I would say. At this house that I was staying at, I experienced rape and hunger. And my mom knew nothing about it. She didn't know, what I was going through at this house. She thought everything was fine. And I didn't want to tell her because I knew her life was already complicated. So I just stuck with it for a year. And then after a year, when I was finally able to enter into school, that's when I was able to move back in with my mom, and she didn't have to worry about a babysitter for us because a lady who lived next to us volunteered to watch us. And so I was able to spend time with my brother and sister and build a relationship with them because I had not seen them for a while. So we grew up together in the house. We lost our house. We actually moved into a motel, and after that, multiple homeless shelters in Indianapolis. But when I started school, because home life was so rough, there was drugs and abuse and hunger in the house, school I felt like was my scapegoat. I would go to school, and it was a relief to not be in the situation I was at home. And I think that's why I excelled so much at school for so long, because it was the only thing I had control of in my life. I couldn't control what went on at home or anything like that, but I knew that I can control school, and I had a say in my activities at school. So I've always excelled in school because it's something that I could control myself. When I was in third grade, we moved again. And that's when I heard some of my friends at school talk about Shepherd Community. And I didn't know what it was, but when my friends mentioned it, I was like, I'll give it a try. So I started going to after school programs, just myself. My brother and sister and mom didn't go. I just wanted, again, another outlet than being at home after school all the time. So I started going to Shepherd Community. I got engaged in the activities after school, and then I made it a permanent thing. So I was in the kids program with Miss Emily for the remainder of my elementary school years. And then after a while, I invited my sister to come. And so we all started, me and my sister, and then my brother eventually came to the summer program as well. We started at Shepherd Community. And since then, a void that was in my life was filled. Because in my life, I did not have anyone to listen to me or show me love. Because my mom was engaged in drugs and doing her own thing. And so me and my brother and sister, we had to support each other. And it became difficult because without an adult influence in our life, we were lost really. And then having been at Shepherd, we had adults who invested in us and were intentional about the relationships with us and showed us what true love was. And because of that love, I grew closer to God because they would love on us with the love of God. And would tell me about God all the time and tell me that there's more to life than abuse and being defined by the abuse or the rape or the neglect that I experienced in my life. And since then, I maintain a personal relationship with every member of Shepherd because they invested so much in my life. And one thing I can say about them is they hold true to their mission of breaking the cycle of poverty, because when my family was at its lowest, they would make sure to help us in any way they can.
Awesome. How cool is that? Now, so where is Denise now?
Denise is finishing up her senior year at Olivet Nazarene
University.
Yep.
University.
Yes, sir.
How cool is that? Yeah, that's where it's going. Yeah.
Cool. You know, the interesting thing that Denise demonstrates, and this was a misperception that I had. These kids are not stupid. They're smart kids. Many of them don't have the opportunities that I had. And when that's empowered, you see that come alive, and you see Denise really get handles on hope and live into that. She's actually going to graduate. She's going to go get her master's from Crossroads Bible College here locally, and she's going to intern with us, combining our donor database with our financial database in 25 hours a week. And then who knows what God's going to call her into.
Wow. Man, this is not about guilt, but how do you not say I want to eat beans and rice all week on this, right? I mean, come on. Seriously. Well, let's thank Rex for being here today. Thank you, Rex.
Thank you. Appreciate
what you're doing, man. Now, Rex is going to be out at Connection Point. If you want to talk to him about serving at Shepherd, going down there and being a part of what they're doing, learn more. There are also annual reports from Serve Life, the first investment group we talked about. You can pick one of these up, learn more about what they're doing. These are blue chip investment options. These are two groups that are highly accredited internationally for how they steward the resources that come into their organizations. All right, and so, you know, this is incredible. And again, this is not about guilt, all right? I mean, I hope every single one of us will in some way engage in some way with eating beans and rice and returning the difference this week. But it's not about guilt. It's realizing how some simple adjustments for 1 week can yield a huge, 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 huge return. And it's really an attitude of gratitude thing. I mean, this is really about realizing, man, I have so much. I have a choice of what I want to eat, what I want to wear, what restaurants I want to go to. For 1 week, I'm going to choose to put that aside and take on a mode of sustenance so that I can give somebody like Denise a shot at abundance. And I'm going to tell you what, we don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. Nobody has to do this. We actually get to do this. And while other churches this week are having Holy Week services, it's Holy Week. That's what a lot of churches are doing. You know, my son, you know what he said we're doing this week? He said, Dad, we're doing Fart Week at Cross Point this week. They're doing Holy Services. We're doing Fart Week. But I thought, you know, there's a scriptural connect right here. I know, that's a long burn right there, right? Just let it burn. Let it sink in. But here's the thing. Scripture actually talks about that there is a pleasing aroma that comes up to God, and there will be a pleasing aroma all over this place this week. And listen, I think God is going to be ecstatic. So, big moment. What do we do? How do we do? How do we walk it out? What's it look like? Go ahead and take out your connection cards. Eric's going to walk us through in a few moments how to walk this out this week. But, you know, this is a big moment right here because on the back of your connection card are some next steps. And we give these each and every week. But the big decision that every single one of us have to face today is, will I enter a week of sustenance mode? In some way, shape, or form, you define how it works for you in order that someone might have a shot at abundance. And if so, then mark that first next step. Say, I'm going to participate in the beans and rice. I'm going to return, whether it's daily, each week, each day this week, I'm going to return the savings, or I'm going to stash it all away and pool it and bring it back next weekend, whatever works for you. Maybe you have a neighbor. Maybe you know somebody that's just really driven by, you know, social causes. I mean, there's a great way to connect them to what God is doing right here in our community. Invite them in. Take an extra beans and rice for them. You know, maybe you're here today and you're like, holy cow, I had no idea what I was walking into today. They're having Fart Week. I thought we were having Holy Week. And, you know, and you're like, you know, man, I don't know about this thing. You know, maybe your next step is just coming back next week. I encourage you to come back. There is going to be love flowing through this place next week when people are returning their gifts, their free will offerings, and blessing people exponentially. It is going to be a phenomenal weekend next weekend. All right, so just take a moment, think through what's my next step. And as I said, in a moment, Eric's going to come up and walk us through the logistics. We're going to send you an email as well. So if you are not on our email list and want the email that gives you how to do it, where to give, you know, we're going to give you all kinds of cool recipes, things to post on Facebook to let people know you're going through the Beans and Rice Challenge. That's all going this afternoon. Make sure we have your email on this card, and we'll send it. But a very spiritual moment, or am I going to let my life be a fragrant offering in many, many ways this week serve God. All right, let's go ahead and stand. And we're going to sing in a moment. Then Eric's going to walk this out. And before we do that, I want to pray for us. God, man, I'm super excited about this. I don't know, God, that there are any initiatives that come close to my excitement for what we're doing this week. I don't know that we've experienced things. We've done a lot of cool things here before, but God, the journey you're going to take this community on in the next 7 days, the growth mode that's going to come, when we choose voluntarily to enter sustenance mode so that somebody can have a shot at experiencing abundance. Man, God, that there is just a power to that. So God, I pray that you would just, even as we sing in these next moments, you would awaken us to the potential that our lives have. We may feel like, man, I don't have a lot of room, but I realize I can make some small adjustments even in just the way I eat this week, and there can be a huge return yielded out of my life. God, just awaken us to it. Stir us, challenge us, inspire us. God, as we sing right now, as we kind of begin to wrap our minds and hearts around this, God, I just pray that you help us to see how we could be a key link in making a difference.